From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. Coming up, the wonderful Noel Fielding stops by to tell us about his new show on Apple TV+, The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin.
He's always reframing, basically. He's like, we're about to be hanged. And he's going, but it's great. Everyone else is going, we're going to be dead.
But first, it's our chance to sit back and relax with two excellent humans with us this week. We have Alex Abad-Santos, a senior correspondent at Vox. Alex, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Also here is the host of CityCast DC and the podcast There Are No Girls on the Internet, Bridget Todd. Bridget, welcome back.
Hello. I'm so excited to be back again.
Yay. Okay. So I want to start off with the royals. Catherine, the Princess of Wales, a.k.a. Kate Middleton, put out a photo of herself and her children for UK Mother's Day. And it turns out it was photoshopped quite badly. Multiple news agencies pulled the photo and she apologized. She said, like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing. This got a lot more play because Kate Middleton hasn't been seen in months after she reportedly had abdominal surgery in January. There is a lot of speculation happening. I think this is why, like, I'm not a person who pursues information about the royals, but this is one that has, like, pervaded the culture enough that, like, everyone, you can't really avoid this story. Now, Alex, you have actually talked to a professional photographer about this for Vox. What did Kate do wrong?
Oh my gosh, there were so many things. It was like, basically the photographer was like, there's so much like amateur stuff happening. Cause like, I think like the whole thing you have to realize is that every celebrity, when they put anything out on the internet for us, it's been edited, it's been retouched. The publicist has looked at it. There's no like reason why the royals, and actually the royals would probably do this more than anyone.
Right.
And so it's just like that fact that it was, there's like missing shadows. There's like a zipper that doesn't line up. There's funny stuff going with people's eyes. There's like a lot of weird things happening. And it's just like, why would you send out this image? I think like the cover up is worse than the crime. It's like, why is this image out there? And why did it like an amateur do it? And why are you circulating in it?
Why is Kate photoshopping her own stuff? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I think what they said was, or what my expert said was, is that the only reason, the only absurd reason, like this whole excuse would make sense, is that they're really protective over the original photo. And so that is, I guess, again, it calls more, it raises more questions than answers about like what is happening.
Oh my God. It's just so weird. So Bridget, I know you spend a lot of time thinking about the internet. I'm sure you have seen also like the wild conspiracy theories happening about what this entire situation is. What do you think about this?
I mean, first of all, I'm not just seeing them. Like you, I'm not somebody who really follows the royals.
Right.
I woke up one day and it was like my group chat was popping off. People I haven't talked to in years are like, what do you think is going on with this? It is on the top of everybody's minds. I've never seen anything like it. But typically with things like this, the real answer is something that is like mundane, or maybe it's interesting in its own way, but it's probably not like, oh, Kate Middleton got a BBL or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like some of the outlandish theories I'm hearing, it's like, yeah, maybe it would be fun if that was true. And it's kind of fun to piece through all the puzzle pieces to put that together. But the real answer is probably something fairly, you know, that we're used to hearing.
Okay, okay, but if she shows up with a BBL to Prince William's coronation,
I would be livid. Like, ooh, I had no idea she was a bad bee.
Yeah.
I think, will you explain what a BBL is for those of us who are not familiar with the term?
Oh my gosh. It is a Brazilian butt lift. Basically, it is it's a surgery that just gives you a bigger butt, but the hard part about it is that the recovery is supposed to be very, very strenuous and very, very painful. And so it's just like, oh, like if someone has a BBL, like you don't see them for a couple months because the recovery is so bad. I do like the other conspiracy theory that she is the disgruntled Oompa Loompa from the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience.
Oh my God.
Which is like anyone who's listening to this who isn't online, I just said a bunch of words that do not make sense. But Google like Oompa Loompa like Oompa Loompa meth lab. And basically there's a thing going on the internet. And it happened like a week or two ago. It was very fun.
Oof. Well, there's a theory that she's like maybe on The Masked Singer too, I heard.
Oh my God. I hope it's something like that where it's like there's a big reveal and the whole time like they were all in on it, just like laying low to generate conversation.
So I feel like it's also worth, you know, pointing out the difference between this and how it compares to like Meghan Markle's treatment by the media, for example, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're finding is that when Meghan Markle is taken out of the equation, the British press can be pretty relentless. And it's now you're getting, I think like the unfun stuff is that there's actually like a more serious, like one of the rumors is that there's a more serious complication that she's facing or that William is cheating on her. And it's just like all this ugly stuff that you're just like, oh, like she probably, because like Meghan Markle had such a gravitational pull on the tabloids, she kind of like, she probably didn't get like the heat as much as she would have if she were like a lone princess, right?
Right.
And so you're kind of seeing like this shift of like, okay, well, this press is just like, has historically been very nasty to women.
Yeah.
Now Kate is getting the full, I guess, the eye of Sauron upon her.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you, Alex. And I also think, you know, I don't think that I think that we're seeing what happens when people are under hyper scrutiny, like every single little thing they do, the press picks apart and reads into it. And I didn't think it was cool when it was Meghan, and I don't really think it's cool now. And I think that regardless of what is happening with her, I do think like folks don't owe us, the public, every piece of information about what they're going through. And it's hard to see it happen to somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Tangentially, this reminds me of another story that I noticed this week that I thought was really interesting. And it's about the act of judging pop stars. There was an article in The Atlantic this week and the headline was "The Pleasure of Judging a Pop Star." And it's all about the chatter around Ariana Grande's new album, in which she addresses her recent divorce and like all the attention her Lovelace life gets. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think this, like, it's very similar, right? I mean, speaking of fame as abuse, like, sometimes it's really fun to kind of talk about a villain, but it also got us thinking about, like, is there a particular pop star who you just, like, kind of love to judge? It's okay if the answer is no, but I was really curious. Because we're punching down, right? I mean, we're punching up, right?
Don't get me in trouble with the fan base.
Oh, I think I know who it is just based on what you've just said in that one sentence, Alex.
No, I love all my pop stars equally, but like there's some that are just like a little more fun. But my pop star that I love to judge, and I think she welcomes it a lot, is J-Lo. It's like, J-Lo. Ooh. Did you guys watch the movie? She has movies, a documentary.
But that's the thing. I mean, it does seem like she's owning the narrative to a certain extent, or at least as much as you possibly can, right?
Well, it's like this lady paid $30 million to make an action movie / rom-com / mute. Like, it's like a weird version of like, if Beyonce if Beyonce didn't have a voice and made Lemonade, that's what it was.
Yeah, my friend said it was Lemonade meets Waterworld, which really piqued my interest.
So right, many liquids.
Right.
Oh my God. That's amazing. What do you think about this, Bridget? Because I mean, it does also come back to the, like, we should probably all maybe just leave these people alone. But then again, like, they're profiting off of putting themselves out there, you know?
That's what's so sticky about it, is that on the one hand, you know, we shouldn't, I think there is a level where it goes a little far. Like, I think it's one thing to sort of casually have an interest in a celebrity or speculate on a celebrity. And it's another, because I definitely have seen pockets of Reddit where people are dedicating far too much of their own energy speculating on people they don't even know. So I do think it's a spectrum. But I certainly have my celebrities that I'm like that with. When you asked if there were any pop stars that I love to hate or love to scrutinize, I was like, oh, I don't really do that. I don't really think I have one.
Oh, and then
I
asked my,
that's what I was thinking. And I was like feeling so smug about it. Like, ooh, look at me.
I know y'all are petty.
And then I asked my partner and he was like, are you kidding? Oh, it's all you do. And so,
wait, who is that?
Are you going to name names?
A couple of, so the two that were the two contenders, Hilaria Baldwin. No, I know she's not a pop star,
that's
but
a good one.
Right.
A lot to dig
into there. And then Jameela Jamil, who he's 100% right. I do like follow everything she does. I kind of like love her, but also love to hate her a little bit.
I also think like it's worth mentioning that like Britney Spears, right? Like we've all come
around. I was
around.
Thinking about, yeah, I mean,
we're all Britney. Like coming back around to like the 90s and like how awful we were. And I hopefully we never get to that point. But it's also now just like, okay, well, F word Justin Timberlake and whatever's happening. Like, let me judge a male pop star. Like, maybe I'm not a better person and I won't judge a pop star. Like, it's like I'll never get to the point where I won't judge pop stars. But let me judge a male pop star for being a jerk.
Alex, did you know that when Justin Timberlake performed at a music festival where I live here in D.C., he danced so badly he had to issue an apology to the whole city of D.C.? I'm not kidding. Look this up. Whenever anybody mentions Justin Timberlake, I have to drop this fun fact.
That's a really fun fact.
It's like we remember. We remember what happened with Janet. We remember what happened to Britney. It's like you, like we... We will never let you rest, Justin Timberlake.
We're going to hold the grudge, and that's okay. Okay, so I also want to talk to you two about the TikTok ban, because this is a really interesting one. Due to concerns about cyber safety, the U.S. House has already passed a bill saying the video sharing app needs to either like split from its Chinese parent company or be banned in the United States. It looks like the bill will have a harder time passing in the Senate, but still, I mean... This is pretty wild. I think partly it's a really interesting case in terms of like the federal government actually being concerned about regulating social media. Mm-hmm. Bridget, as an extremely online human, what strikes you about this story?
Well, what strikes me about this story is that I think I see a lot of elected officials really like talking tough on big tech. And I think that's great. Nobody thinks that big tech needs to be reined in more than me. Nobody wants to see protections and wants to make sure that social media apps are like actually safe for their user base, which tends to be younger folks. Totally on board. However, I have a little bit of a hard time swallowing that this is for our own protection when we don't really have any kind of like widespread, meaningful data privacy protections in the United States. And so it just doesn't make any, like somebody smarter than me needs to explain how like, as Americans, all of our data is for sale by anybody who wants it, including places like China. And that's not a threat, but TikTok is the threat. Like somebody needs to explain this to me.
Yeah. Well, and on your show this week, you also talked about how a ban would harm marginalized communities, which is like, you know, I think that's worth talking about too.
Yeah. I mean, so often I think that traditionally marginalized communities and voices don't have easy pathways to like getting an op-ed in the New York Times or like getting their issue or their advocacy cause on TV. And so these alternative methods of building platforms like TikTok have been invaluable in terms of folks from marginalized communities really making their voices heard. There are so many issues that I would never have heard about if not for TikTok. And I really do firmly believe that banning TikTok is just going to make it that much harder for those marginalized communities to really use their voices, especially given the state that platforms like Twitter/X are in, you know?
I was just going to say, yeah, I remember that coming up around Twitter with it changing, you know, the extent to which it would still be able to be a platform where people could, you know, share information about protests or all of that really important stuff just because it was so decentralized, you know?
Exactly.
So, Alex, would you miss TikTok?
I mean, do I need to know the top 10 restaurants in my city that serve the best pasta and the pancakes? Because is that a national security threat? Like, I think the whole thing, as Bridget mentioned, is just like, okay, well, it's like we all have iPhones, right? Like, how much of like my iPhone is a security threat? Because that, like, who has all that data that's happening? We all have it. We're all accessing TikTok through our phones.
Yeah.
Is that a problem? Why isn't it a problem? And it just feels like it's a very sexy, flashy move. But it's also like, okay, if you can get this organized, why don't you get organized on guns? Like, if you can get this organized, why don't you get more organized on like healthcare of like stuff that actually affects us?
Student loan forgiveness.
Loan forgiveness or anything. It's just like, and again, it kind of comes back to the whole, and this is like just a political like example. It's just like, it's kind of like the whole thing with like drag queens, right? It's just like, oh my gosh, this giant threat of drag queen story hour. And it's like, it feels like it's something that riles up a base. It riles up voters. It gets people talking. But it's like, is the threat, like you haven't outlined enough of what this threat is. Maybe I'm naive, but I'm just like, I don't understand. Like, in a world where our data, as Bridget said, is like everywhere and being sold everywhere.
We're giving it away.
Yeah, this is the particular one. It just seems kind of a stunt to me.
And I would go further and say that I think the answer to that is because Facebook is owned by an American. It's an American company, right?
I think a lot of it is the China of it all, which, to your point, Bridget, is like, okay, but like, really? Like, is that what we should be worried about?
Well, yeah, it just seems to me like what they're saying is, no, a vast surveillance state where every piece of information about you and your kids is for sale, that's not the problem. The problem is that the United States is not in charge
of it. This other country.
I don't love it.
Yeah. One more story that I cannot get enough of this week is about the World Banana Forum, largely just because I love that phrase so much.
Who knew there was a World Banana Forum?
I know, right? It exists. It's real. They met in Rome this week. But sadly, it's not looking so good for bananas. They're expected to get more expensive because, you guessed it, climate change. Are you concerned about the future of bananas?
I do think that, you know, when we think about the impacts of climate change, I think that when things are tangibly here, where it's like you can no longer get X thing, you can no longer enjoy Y thing.
Yeah.
I think it's going to take I think that those kinds of instances might be the thing that really wake people up on the fact that this is here and it's reality. It's interesting to me that we can watch all of these big, you know, weather related disasters all around the globe and be like, what are you going to do?
I think things like bananas
that might actually drive it home.
Right. Well, that's like taking the same thing from like conservation, right? Like, it's like when you save like a panda, because a panda is very cute and people love pandas, like it's easier to sell like conservation as like, when you save a panda, you're saving like its ecosystem and you're saving X, Y, and Z. And people are more on board versus like, oh, like global warming is like extreme weather. Like, they don't care. No one cares about extreme weather if it isn't happening
to
you.
It snowed in Mexico City. It's fine.
It's fine. I think what you have to do is you have to get like Big Strawberry on board or like Big Apple and be
Or World Banana Forum.
I think that Apple, like, what are the fruits that people really love? Like, people like will just like, can't look forward to enough. I feel like it's like the summer stone fruit stuff.
Yeah, probably.
And then just be like, okay, well, how does this threaten that? Because I feel like if you get like a sexy enough fruit that is going to, I guess, be extinct, people will like be like, no, don't take our strawberries away.
That's such a good point.
Bananas are such a nutrient rich food and they're still pretty cheap, which I do think is really important, you know, when it comes to like stuff a lot of different people can afford.
I eat a banana every day.
Like,
are a staple in my house. It's one of those things that if at the end of the day I have one banana left, I go to the store and I get more bananas. We never run out of them in my house.
Bridget, that's amazing. Well, and like, so how much of the appeal for you is that they are as cheap as they are?
That's a big part of it. They're cheap. Right? They're nutrient rich. They're really versatile. When they go bad, you can still use them, which I think
banana
is really cool. They're
one of the best things ever.
I swear I'm not in the pocket of Big Banana, but they're
great.
World
Banana Forum?
Yeah, the World Banana Forum. Although, go ahead. If you want to cut me a check, World Banana Forum, I'm happy to be in the bag for you all.
You could be the first banana influencer.
I would gladly do that.
Could you just imagine, just like, get ready with me on my band TikTok. It's me, the world's premier banana influencer.
World Banana Forum, let's make it happen.
I'm convinced I want to buy a banana now. After listening to Bridget, I was like, I need a banana. I want bananas in my house all the time.
World Banana Forum, call me.
Oh my God, amazing. Well, Bridget, Alex, thank you both so much for coming on. This was actually too much fun.
Thanks for having me. It was so much fun to gossip and talk about bananas and the royals.
This was great. Thanks so much.
In just a minute, we are going to hear from the wonderful Noel Fielding. There is a new show out on Apple TV Plus. It's called The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, and it is a completely absurd retelling of the story of Dick Turpin. He was a real person who robbed carriages in England in the 1700s. The show stars the delightful Noel Fielding as Dick. You may know him from the Great British Bake Off. He is the encouraging host who wears very tight pants and very large, strange sweaters. You might also know him from the beloved, deeply weird sketch comedy show, The Mighty Boosh. In his new show, Noel plays a chaotically whimsical pacifist vegan who encourages his crew of scoundrels to wear billowy clothing if they feel like it.
See, Tom King was an old school highwayman. I'm new school. There's going to be less violence on my watch, more charm, maybe even some panache. We're not going to be giving money to fat cats like you. We're going to give it to real people, poor people, like little Karen, an elf who can't draw. Catch you on the flip side, Big Chin.
Noel is here with us now, along with the executive producer of the show, Kenton Allen. Noel, welcome to the show.
Hello, we've got lots of billowy clothing on now, but unfortunately, this is just audio. So.
Kenton, welcome also to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having us.
It was really funny. As I was watching, I was like texting myself notes of things that I wanted to talk about, and the list ended up being kind of exquisitely manic. It was just a vegan pacifist, how much is improv, chicken, man from the future, panache with two exclamation points, breezy outfits, and then it's the team with team in all caps.
I mean, I'd like for it to be a bit weirder, obviously. But.
So yeah, Noel, what are your criteria for a project, and why is it your ability to wear eyeliner?
These are deal breakers for me. I'm not going into a project playing a guy in a suit with short hair. I don't know, really. I've been in the wilderness a little bit, comedy-wise. I'd sort of done the Boosh, and then I feel like the Boosh was like 20 years of my life. And then I did this crazy show called Luxury Comedy, where I literally just went back to art school, and it was very experimental, lots of animation, lots of, it was probably not the show to follow the Boosh in a weird way, because the Boosh become successful at that point. So if you loved the Boosh, then this was a difficult show. There was no entry point. It was just madness. So, 10% of people loved it to the point that they had that show tattooed onto their skin, you know, and then obviously there were a lot of other people who didn't. So I decided...
The ones who aren't in prison.
Yeah. That... The straight. So basically, I sort of went in another direction, really. And so I didn't Bake Off, and then I had kids, and I sort of thought it was hard for me to come back to comedy, really. So I was waiting for the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
I tried to do a few things. I tried to write a few things, but I just couldn't quite see a way back into comedy after the Boosh. It sort of done me in a little bit, because it was, you know, it's that thing where the first thing you do is quite successful, and you do everything. You do live stuff, and you do albums, and you do TV shows and radio. We did everything, really. I had our own festival, you know. The only thing we didn't do was write a film. So yeah, I didn't really want to do, I was a bit against coming back and doing comedy. And then Kent rang me up and said, do you want to play Dick Turpin? And I just immediately said yes. I was like, oh my God, that's fucking amazing. And then what I loved about it was that is Kenton all over, is that Kenton will just go, do you want to play Dick Turpin? We'll make it happen. And you just think, okay, you trust him.
That's
and
amazing.
Somehow he does. Somehow. I don't know how he does it.
That's a lot of bribery.
So Kenton, how well known is Dick Turpin in the UK? This was a character that I had never heard of.
He is a character that we knew as kids growing up, because there was a kids' TV series on about Dick Turpin in the 70s. So we used to, you know, talk about Dick Turpin and pretend to be Dick Turpin. So he was sort of in the culture, and he's sort of in the popular culture a bit like Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And then when in our teenage years, there was a guy called Adam Ant, a band called Adam and the Ants, and he had a song called Stand and Deliver, Your Money or Your Life, which is about Dick Turpin, but he was like a dandy hero. I'm the dandy highwayman who you're too scared to mention. I spend my cash on looking flash and grabbing your attention. The devil take your stereo and your record collection. The way you look, you'll qualify for next year's old age pension. The universe does reward you in that weird way. I mean, yeah. Obsessed About a Man is the first album I bought, and he was a big hero of mine.
But it's a lot, you know? I really loved Alice Cooper when I was a kid, and I ended up playing Alice Cooper. It's like, you summed that, and then the Dick Turpin show, it was a drama. It wasn't a comedy.
Yeah.
The guy in it could do comedy. He was called Richard O'Sullivan, and he was in lots of sitcoms, and he was sort of cheeky, slightly charming, handsome, housewife's favorite dude. But he played it quite straight, actually, and he was quite menacing in it. It was quite interesting. So as kids, we pretend to be Dick Turpin in the same way that we pretend to be Robin Hood. Play it in the street, or, you know, so there's a lot of sword fights in it and gunfight, duels and horse riding and stuff.
And he was romanticized. There's a writer called Henry Fielding who, as a side note, also invented the British police force.
Hmm.
He invented the peelers. But he romanticized Turpin in some novels as this kind of rather romantic man of the people. When the truth was, he was a horrible, violent, nasty criminal murderer. So, which we ignored those bits of him.
Less murder, more glitter is kind of where you went with that.
Yeah, thigh-high boots rather than murder. I don't think he knitted in real life.
He should have. Might have been still alive.
Yeah, that might have been the savior.
Speaking of knitting, I was thrilled to see you knitting in the show, Noel. I knit myself. I'm working on a sweater these days. Do you knit?
Of course I do. I knitted when I was a child. My grandma, my French grandma, spent a lot of time bringing me up because my parents both had to work because they were very young. My dad was like 20 when he had me, 19. So
I don't know how people do that.
And I know, it's crazy. Although I've got two kids under 5 and I'm 50. So as you can imagine, I wish that I had them when I was. And I'm trying to carry them both up the stairs in high heels. 19 days of the itchy and scratchy show, which I love them. They're amazing. But yeah, I feel like maybe when you're younger, you've got a bit more energy. Mm. But then maybe when you're older, you're a bit more immensely prepared for children.
Yeah, I mean, there's upsides either way.
It's just hilarious. We have these little Dick Tub and button badges made when we launched the show. And when we're in New York, and we landed in New York, Noel called his children who were crying and said, "We've sauced Daddy down the plug hole."
They dropped. That I gave this little button badge that I gave Charlie, who's 5.
Dick Turkin's gone down the plug hole.
Dick Turkin. And they went, "Dick Turkin, Dad has gone down the plug hole." They were sort of absolutely hysterical.
Oh my God.
And it was absolutely just
the funniest thing I've ever heard.
And then I said, "Don't worry, I'll get you both another one." Okay. Yeah, my grandma taught me to knit. And then I was part of the sort of Shoreditch scene in Hoxton and Shoreditch. You know, all my friends were sort of trendy, weird Shoreditch characters that we sent up a lot in the bush. And at the point I sort of left that scene, I got too old for that scene and moved to North London, there were knitting evenings in pubs.
Yes.
And that's when I thought, okay, I have to leave that scene. Like we've gone into quite a weird place as a human race where we go to pubs and have knitting evenings. I mean, it's incredible in a way.
I was going to say, I feel like that's kind of the apex right there, you know?
With the knitting, I kept saying, if he is going to be knitting, it is a funny standalone, but it'd be great if it has something to do with the plot. So we managed to get it back in, which is great. Like all those little things. But I think the more obscure those things are, the better they are, really. You don't see them coming back. I mean, maybe you do when you start writing, you know, you go, "Well, that's definitely going to come back because that's really weird."
Well, yeah.
Why they keep putting that balaclava?
Yes.
Definitely.
It's the specificity of that weirdness that's just so perfect, you know?
Yeah.
So, Kenton, you called Noel and had this idea about Dick Turpin.
Yeah.
We play a game at Big Talk where we're born, which is sort of casting bingo. So who would make a great Marilyn Monroe, or who would play a brilliant Donald Trump, you know, casting actors. And somebody said, "Who would play Dick Turpin?" And Victoria, my colleague, actually said, "Noel Fielding." And it just becomes an undeniable thing. You can't get it out of your head. Of course, Noel Fielding should be Dick Turpin. And that sort of sends you on a creative path, which is just obvious what the character should be like, infused by Noel's and a great comic legacy and also his natural kind of instincts.
So we just phoned up Jay Hunt at Apple TV Plus and said, Noel Fielding is Dick Turpin. And she said, that's a very good idea. Can we? So we went in for a chat, didn't we? We went into the Apple, the lauded Apple Halls of Brilliance, and we talked about it. And then she went, great, go and write a script.
She's great, Jay. Jay put me in Bake Off, obviously.
Oh, wow, right.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole nation was horrified, obviously. But yeah. Jay said, no,
outraged.
It's going to be fine. Don't worry.
Oh, you're perfect. That's exactly what needed to happen.
Be calm.
You know, wow. The world won't end.
I think people felt like the world might.
So she got, you know, she got it just intrinsically. And then we were very lucky to be able to make it.
And also,
and to make it on a scale that,
so yeah,
I guess, you know, you can't often do in comedy. Because often when you hear people talk about money and say, oh, we had lots of money to make it, you always think a bit of you goes, yeah, I bet it's rubbish.
Yeah.
But you spent too much money in that. And you, but I'm proud that we kept focus on the comedy as well. So we set out to make a funny comedy, which it may seem like a contradiction in terms, but I, you know, in a world in which the bear, I love the bear, but
wins
best comedy at the Emmys or the Globes.
Right.
We there's no make bear a, in that wasn't, show. I was disappointed.
No, really disappointed. No,
that's true.
It's the bear.
Paddington would make some sort of
no bear.
Nothing.
Not even a stuffed bear.
I know.
And there's no knitting.
Gutted.
No knitting. Oh, that's where they went wrong. No actual bear.
Yeah, there is no knitting.
Again, but the lead is a bear. Now you're talking. You got yourself a show there, right?
I would watch it. I would watch it.
So what I really appreciated about the budget with Apple for Dick Turpin was that the jokes were filmic, slightly filmic jokes. What you imagine could actually be shot in camera, which is rare. So a comedy, you've got good jokes and you can actually shoot them in camera and you can actually turn a stagecoach over or whatever it is you need to do. Or
you could write a loose cartwheel, bounce throughout the episode and then bash it into Hugh Bonneville.
Oh, amazing.
That was an expensive joke.
Yeah. I love joke. These jokes, right? We produce these conversations with producers where they always go, now,
oh my God.
I just want to say, this joke is great. I love that you've written it's great, but it does take up a third of the budget. Are you sure you want that?
How funny is this going to be? The knitting, which is very cost-effective humor.
I was going to say, that's actually, especially if you actually knit the balaclava, then you're good to go, really. I think one of my favorite themes in the show is the fact that initially you think Dick is just like very bad at what he does.
Yeah.
But then like what you first think of as incompetence actually kind of ends up being about just like doing things differently and making it weird in the best possible way.
Yeah. And also just, you know, he's trying to go through that. He's trying to navigate his gang through that world in a way where he's not upsetting other people, where he's thinking about other people's feelings and what they want to, you know, he's just quite a nice, kind fella. And there's definitely a modernness to that character, that he's very inclusive and quite kind, and he's aware of people's sort of shortcomings and tries to sort of say, well, that's great, and tries to, he's always reframing, basically. He's like, we're about to be hanged, and he's going, but it's great, and everyone else is going, we're gonna be dead. So he's always trying to put like give everyone a silver lining, you know.
I know what you're thinking, who is this guy with the incredible cheekbones? Where does he get his hair done? One day, I'll be the most famous highwayman in all of England.
You are literally about to be hanged, you idiot!
I feel like everyone needs a Dick in their lives where they can just, that sounded weird, sorry. But I can't talk about this show without making bad jokes. But I feel like you need a Dick in your gang, you know, because I feel like he's the sort of person that will always say, okay, well, this has happened, but what if we do this? And then everyone gets excited and goes, and it gets somehow weirdly his enthusiasm and his naivety gets them out of situations in a non-violent way, which I think is quite nice.
Oh my God. Well, there's also a part in the show where Dick says, if you put good vibes out there, the universe rewards you.
Yeah.
And I think that's so lovely. I mean, yeah, it's something it reminded me of another Nerdette guest once talked about how she likes to consider herself to be aggressively delightful. And it's that idea of, you know, like complimenting the person in line at the store on her amazing coat or just like whatever. Just, you know, there's like an openness to it that I think is really beautiful. And it seems like something that you really embrace too, especially in your work, but probably just as a human being too, I would guess, right?
Try to, but you know what? There are many comic characters who are optimistic and sort of funny. Seinfeld is a good, you know, like he's nothing really bad happens to Jerry. He's sort of quite, and he's quite upbeat and he's quite, he's got three characters around him who are always sort of ridiculous and he's sort of watching really slightly outside of, you know, things and commenting on what they're doing. But he's quite a sort of nice person. I like those characters. They're much harder to play because they're more normal in a weird way, because it's much easier to play a real freak, you know, like a Kramer or a Harpo Marx. It's much easier to play a much more wildly eccentric character. But I sort of feel like the key to this is you had to like Dick. If you didn't like him, I wasn't sure that the world could be a bit scary and a bit menacing because there's a lot of freaky people in it. So I think we needed someone definitely in the center of it, at the heart of it, who you were on their side, you know, and had a bit of empathy for them and were following them through it. So it's their story. Because there's some freaks in this show, let's be honest.
There's also just so much charm, I think. Like, you are so utterly charming in that role.
Thanks, that's very kind. That's my only skill.
Well, thank you both for taking the time to chat with
pleasure.
Me.
Pleasure.
It's a real pleasure.
Bye. Is any of that usable, do you think?
No.
All right, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening along. Just so you know, your deadline for voicemails about our March book club selection, Martyr, are due on Monday. So now is the time. If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear you tell us about them. Just record yourself on your little smartphone and then email that file to nerdatpodcast@gmail.com. Also, we have already announced our April and March book club picks. It is never too soon to get started. We are reading Beautyland by Marie-Helene Bertino in April. And then in May, we are reading Amor Toll's new short story collection, Table for Two. I cannot wait to hear what you think about both of those. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman at WBEZ in Chicago and is part of the NPR network. And our executive producer is Brendan Banizak. Have a wonderful weekend.
Well, thanks for your lovely enthusiasm and lovely book collection, and go and do your laundry.